The Senate Blue Ribbon Committee set to tackle both the sugar importation mess and the allegedly overpriced laptops issue next week. Government to submit its proposed 5.26 trillion peso national budget for 2023 to Congress on Monday. U.S. President Joe Biden signs into law a major climate and health care spending bill. And China warns the U.K. against following America's footsteps on the Taiwan issue. We'll discuss the rising tensions over Taiwan with veteran journalist Benjamin Lim of The Straits Times. Hi, I'm Karina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, the Philippine Senate set to investigate the sugar importation mess and the allegedly overpriced laptops purchased by government. Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Senator Francis Tolentino says the hearing on the sugar controversy that'll start on August 23, while the laptops issue will be tackled August 25th. Senate President Juan Miguel Zubiri earlier called for the investigation into the sugar importation fiasco, saying kickbacks from sugar imports may reach up to 600 million pesos. Top beverage companies confirm they are facing a shortage of premium refined sugar as government tries to resolve a sugar importation order controversy. Let's hear more from Jackie Pascual.
The sugar supply problem has started to take its toll on the business community. The Philippine Chamber of Commerce and Industry says the country is experiencing a shortage, and many large manufacturers and small businesses are getting more worried. BCCI President George Barcelon asserts there is a need to import sugar now.
We're already seeing prices increases. Mga beverages, nag-slow down yung production. Smaller ones, I heard, no, they're stopping their operation in the big time kasi hindi nila maasahan yung supply ng sugar.
Top beverage companies in the country have issued a joint statement confirming the industry is facing a shortage of refined sugar, which is a key ingredient of their products. They say they are working with stakeholders and government to address the situation. Some small businesses have already raised prices, particularly those that require sugar, such as bake shops and milk tea shops.
Price increase talaga. Medyo affected po lahat ng mga home bakers. Yung eggs and yung sugar, kasi yun po yung common sa mga baking industries. So, ayun po, medyo heartbreaking siya.
Hindi man namin gusto magtaas, kailangan talaga namin magtaas.
Some stores are still trying to cope with the problem by not implementing price hikes just yet. But that too may change.
Mas maganda po siguro na kami magtiis kaysa yung mga customer po namin yung mahirapan. Pag bumili po sila isang beses, tas maramdaman nila, ayun, taas pala dito. Hindi na sila bibili.
The Restaurant Owners Association of the Philippines hopes the problem will be resolved soon, highlighting the fact that most stores are using sugar in many products. The group hopes government will help the sugar farmers to have better supply in the long run. Go Negocio founder Joey Concepcion, whose family once owned a beverage company, agrees that local farmers must first be protected. He wants government to plan the importation ahead of time so it will not have a negative effect on the local sugar sector.
Alam naman natin na yung panahon ng pagka-harvest, so we already should plan, no? Whether importation should be allowed, pero much earlier, no? Harvest is starting to happen.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has earlier said he may import 150,000 metric tons of sugar in October. He has also met with members of the Chamber of Food Manufacturers, Inc., which counts as members, big corporations using sugar in their products. Marcos eyes direct importation of sugar through industry players to address supply problems. Jackie Pascual, ABS-CBN News.
Senator Raffy Tulfo suggests legalizing and regulating the retail of imported used clothes locally, known as ukay-ukay. Under the law, the commercial importation of used clothing and rags is prohibited to protect public health. But Tulfo points out imported used clothes are still entering the country illegally. He says it's about time to legalize it to raise much-needed government revenue.
Sa ngayon kasi ay kinabang yan. Eh, yung mga big-time smugglers, yung mga corrupt sa Bureau of Customs. And the first thing I will do, I'll file a resolution para pag-usapan kung paano natin ma-repeal yung 4653RA na sinasabing hindi dapat nag-import ng mga used clothing for that reason. So i-repeal na dapat yan lang sa gayon legal para makapagbayad na ng tax, regulate na yan. Wala naman nagreklamo ng mga retailers. So ang kompetensya naman talaga ng mga retailers, hindi naman sa okay-okay yung mga galing sa China.
But a former official of the Bureau of Internal Revenue says there's already a law imposing duties on goods coming from abroad. He says government should instead make sure ukay-ukay outlets are registered with the BIR.
Kung kumita sila, ano-ano pa man, eh kung may natirang kita, may income tax po yan. Kung ang paninda naman ay kagaya ng mga tela o mga damit, ay definitely po covered ng rules on taxation. Ibig sabihin, magrehistro, magpasiguro ng invoices. Then mga paninda yan, sales invoices ang kailangan natin dyan. Then bayaran yung tamang buwis kung lumagpas yan doon sa tinatawag nating VAT threshold.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention again labels the Philippines as a high travel risk for COVID-19. The country was included with Nepal and Russia in the high-risk group, or level 3 of the CDC's latest travel health notice. The category applies to countries with over 100 new COVID cases over the past 28 days. The Philippine Health Department points out the risk classification metrics used by the country are different from those of the CDC.
Sa CDC, ang ginagamit po nila yung incidence rate triangulated with the testing data. Dito po sa ating bansa, we know na ito pong number of cases ay hindi po na natin binibigyan ng equal weight with our healthcare utilization.
The Philippines logged more than 2,000 new COVID infections Tuesday, raising the number of active cases to 36,190. State auditors flagged the Philippine Health Department for supposed lapses in its COVID pandemic response. They cited its low fund utilization and its failure to prevent COVID vaccine doses from going to waste. The details from Adrian Ayalin.
Despite the aggressive push of the Department of Health on its COVID-19 vaccination drive, the agency failed to impress the Commission on Audit, which cited lapses in its inoculation efforts, among other programs to counter the spread of the coronavirus. In the 2021 audit report on the DOH, state auditors noted wasted vaccines totaling 32,724 doses and almost expired ones totaling 12,854 vials. According to the audit team, the delays in the administration of vaccines may ultimately lead to wastage of government resources. The DOH explained to the auditors, however, that wastages of vaccines comprised of newer jabs with shorter shelf life of 6 months pursuant to the emergency use authorization of the Food and Drug Administration. The audit report also stated that for 2021, there were unobligated COVID-19 funds amounting to 6.648 billion pesos. And undisbursed funds totaling 23.656 billion pesos. Auditors said the low utilization of government funds can be counter-beneficial to the efforts of the department in controlling the spread of COVID-19. The DOH management, however, told the audit team that among the causes of low utilization of funds were cancellation and failure of procurement, delays in liquidation reports of previous fund transfers, among others. While the procurement service of the Department of Budget and Management procured COVID-19-related items using funds transferred by the DOH, the auditors noted non-receipt of items amounting to 18.557 million pesos by recipients indicated in property transfer reports, as well as delivery of items amounting to 166.21 million pesos to agencies other than the intended recipients. The DOH management said in its response to the audit team that it has requested an explanation from the Office of Civil Defense, as most of the deficiencies were observed during deliveries of the items. The audit team also noticed improper charging by Culion Sanitarium and General Hospital of Medicines such as Remdesivir and Tocilizumab, as well as personal protective equipment of health workers to patients at marked-up prices. Among the reasons cited by the hospital was that the medicines were procured during an emergency situation, but prices were subsequently readjusted. The DOH told the audit team that government hospitals were given priority in the allocation. DOH officer in charge Maria Rosario Vergere stressed that the department has 60 days to respond to the audit report, but she also has this request to the commission.
We hope also and we request that other government agencies will try to avoid announcing to the public until po nakakapag-usap with the concerned government agency so as not to give this kind of perception to people na meron na agad na issue kung hindi pa naman ho nakakapagpaliwanag ang DOH. Let us try to review this first, evaluate, and then after nung binibigay niyong 60 days sa amin, tsaka po tayo magpapaliwanag sa atin pong mga kababayan.
Adrian Ayalin, ABS-CBN News.
With the threat of COVID-19 still lingering, here are some safety tips for students who are going back to classrooms next week.
It was Skylar's first time to attend face-to-face classes in grade school this week. His mother, Vanessa, admitted she was nervous her son might get sick given that all of their family members had been infected with COVID-19. Vanessa says she taught his son how to avoid getting COVID.
Aral na siya, the moment na mabahing siya, kailangan nakatakip ang mouth, lagi naka-mask. Hindi tatanggalin hanggat kung hindi kumakain. Kailangan sanitize, wash hands, distancing. Yun yung, kumbaga, yun yung ano, mga SOP kapag lumabas siya.
Dr. Cynthia Kwayuiko, a pediatrician from Manila Doctors Hospital, suggested that each student should bring a COVID-19 go bag to school. It must be a transparent bag that is easily washable, containing extra face masks that can fit the child properly. As much as possible, medical-grade mask and not cloth mask should be used by children.
Especially in children, dapat ho, nakatakip na ganyan, nakatakip din sa baba. Ang mga children ho kasi, nakita ang ilong. Mali ho, may buhol na dyan para mahigpit na nasa bata. Kasi kung maluwag at pang adult siya, nalalaglag yan syempre. Oo, so dapat binubuhol mo dito.
She also discouraged attaching face masks on lanyards or necklaces.
Ayaw na ayaw ko din pong makita na may mask ka tapos may nakakwentas. Kasi pagkain mo, ibabagsak mong ganyan. Adi, nalaglag na yung mask mo, napunta na dun sa hindi nakamask na katawan mo, nakokontaminate din siya. O kaya, pagkakakain ka, nilalagay mo sa likod mong ganon, mali.
Dr. Kwayuiko demonstrated how children can still sip drinks while still wearing a mask. After eating during school break, children must throw away the mask and use a new one.
Susubukan na lang ganyan, or iinom ka ng soft, ng tubig, gano'n na lang. Or kung juice, gano'n na lang. Sa straw, tataas na lang, huwag mo nang tanggalin. Nakasuot siyang ganyan, kukuhanin ko lang, tapos kukuhanin ko ganyan. Kasi ito po yung marumi. Kaya ang gagawin mo ganyan, tapos, ayan, tapon na.
The COVID-19 go bag should also contain alcohol or sanitizer, tissue paper, wet wipes, contact numbers of parents or guardians, an identification or vaccination card of the child.
At ipagkinaka-importanteng dapat ilagay natin, telephone number ni mama at ni papa, kasi ano man ang mangyari, at least may telephone number siya sa go bag. Gusto ko, dinidikit niyo yan dito. At ang isa pa, yung ID kung siya ay vaccinated or not.
Dr. Kwayuiko reminded teachers that they should also be prepared to assist students. Every classroom should also have extra face masks, tissue papers, and alcohol. Joyce Balanso, ABS-CBN News.
More than 23,000 police officers will be deployed nationwide for next week's opening of classes. The Philippi National Police says assistance desks will also be set up in school premises to address any security concerns. The PNP will also ensure the strict implementation of basic health protocols as the threat of COVID remains.
Bago pa lamang po sir yung mga plano na pagbubukas ng mga eskwelahan po natin as early as last week of July ay nakipag-ugnayan na po tayo sa ating mga school administrators pati na rin po yung ating yung ibang mga government agencies dahil inaasahan nga po natin na maliban po sa mga eskwelahan ay dadagsain din po itong ating mga transportation hubs and terminals at baka makasiguro po tayo na ma-maintain pa rin po at ma-observe pa rin po yung ating minimum public health protocols ay maglalabas din po tayo ng mga tauhan natin, yung mga tinatawag po natin na PNP COVID-19 patrollers na siya pong makikipag-ugnayan sa mga management po ng mga establishmento, pati rin na rin po ng eskwelahan.
The World Health Organization seeks the public's help in finding a new name for monkeypox. The WHO cautions against using geographic locations, people's names, animal species, and other specific references. Pressure is growing for a new name for the disease, in part because critics say it is misleading, since monkeys are not the original host. On Saturday, the Global Health Agency announced it had renamed the Congo Basin and West African variants of monkeypox as clade 1 and clade 2. Back here at home, one of the Philippines' greatest athletes, sprint champion Lita De Vega, has been laid to rest days after she lost her battle with cancer. Jeffrey Arnaiz now joins us from the Pandayan Memorial Park in Mekawayan, Bulacan. Jeffrey, what more can you tell us?
Camila sports icon Lidia De Vega's remains were finally laid to rest here at the Pandayan Memorial Park in Mekawayan City. Family members, sports fans, and fellow athletes attended the last funeral mass for De Vega this morning. De Vega's remains were transferred from the Memorial Chapel to the church at 9 a.m. The family were assisted by members of the Philippine Navy, where De Vega once served as a reservist. The Navy also gave their final salute to the athlete who was named as Asia's fastest woman in the 1980s. The family members are also wearing a white shirt with a photo of De Vega. De Vega's fellow athletes from the Gintong Ali program during former President Marcos Sr.'s administration, including Elma Muros, Dario De Rosas, Tito Tulawan, Nenita Takuyan, and Bernadette Yarte also attended the funeral mass. Former Gintong Alay Camp Director Antonio Carlos Cuda was also present. De Vega's daughter Stephanie gave a heartfelt message after the funeral mass. For Cuda, the nation lost a national treasure. Carmina De Vega was given a 21-gun salute by the Philippine Navy. A Philippine flag was also given to the family. The local government earlier said that they are now looking for a space where they can display permanently De Vega's memorabilia. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Jeffrey Arnaiz, there joining us live this noon. And from there, we're going to take a break now. Up ahead, China warning the UK against meddling in issues involving Taiwan. More on that when we come back. Stay with Dateline Philippines here on AMC. We're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Senate Blue Ribbon Committee gearing up for two investigations next week. First, they'll tackle the sugar importation mess and then the allegedly overpriced laptops issue. The proposed 5.26 trillion peso national budget all set for submission. The palace to present this to Congress come Monday. A major climate and healthcare spending bill signed by U.S. President Joe Biden. Warning from China against the UK, do not follow in America's footsteps on the Taiwan issue. Back with more news, China warns the UK of serious consequences should it follow in the footsteps of the US over the Taiwan issue. In an opinion piece on The Guardian, China's envoy to Britain wrote that Taiwan had become a touchstone for bilateral relations. He adds there is no reason for the UK to disregard that and emulate what the US has done. These remarks come after Beijing staged a fresh round of military drills in response to another U.S. congressional delegation visiting Taiwan. Earlier this month, U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the self-ruled island, igniting Beijing's fury. For more on the rising tensions over Taiwan, we're now joined by veteran journalist Benjamin Lim. He's the global affairs correspondent for Singapore Straits Times. He was also the China and Taipei bureau chief for Reuters for, I'd say, what, two decades? Benjamin, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me. Yep. No, I was with Reuters for 27 years, and that was from 1991 until my retirement in 2018.
Amazing, extensive experience you have right there, Ben. So let's start off with what the UK has just warned, or China has just warned the UK, do not follow in America's footsteps. How do you make sense of that? And what kind of leverage really does China have over the UK to issue such a warning?
Right. Well, for China, this is the dispute between Beijing and Taipei is the unfinished Chinese civil war. And so most countries in the world recognize the one China policy. And so Beijing hopes that all the other countries will not follow suit, right? But if you think about it, the intended or unintended consequences of Nancy Pelosi's visit are the following, right? For the U.S., it's an opportunity to sell more weapons to Taiwan. At the same time, they can make China look bad, i.e. demonize China, and then contain China, right? For Beijing, the visit has galvanized the Chinese nation. They're all behind the government, behind the party. But at the same time, the tensions divert attention away from China's woes, including the economic slowdown, the tough COVID measures. And last but not least, of course, China is able to regularize the drills, right? This is now the new normal. And as for Taiwan, they just broke out of diplomatic isolation, right? It's a minor victory, but then it's going to be a Pyrrhic victory, right? But they, of course, have roped in the U.S. to defend Taiwan, they think. And also they're seeking the support and winning the sympathy of Western democracies and Japan. Mm-hmm. So China is this is not bad news. The tensions, if they are manageable, are not necessarily bad news for the stakeholders, right? But of course, it's bad news for us, the Philippines, and the rest of ASEAN. And so China does not want the UK to, follow in America's footsteps.
Mm. Okay, we're going to go into that a bit more later on. But first, with what you just said, it seems like this whole, what we've been seeing the past couple of weeks, really is beneficial to both two nations, the U.S. and China. As you correctly pointed out, it's an opportunity for the U.S. to sell more weapons. And for China, it's sort of, how would you say it? It's like a smokescreen for what's happening locally. But will Taiwan be able to handle the consequences? It's caught right there in the middle. With these actions from both nations, the U.S. and China, will they be able to handle the consequences?
If the tensions are manageable, then it's going to be fine for all three stakeholders. But Taiwan is trying to push the envelope, and they want to become a de jure independent, because most people forget that if you read Western media, they all say that the PRC has never ruled Taiwan for not even a day, right? But the Western media tend to forget that Chiang Kai-shek lost the Chinese Civil War and fled to Taiwan and took with him most of China's gold reserves, as well as all the relics. Mm. And the civil war has not ended. North and South Korea signed an armistice in 1953. China and Taiwan never signed anything. So as far as Beijing is concerned, the civil war is not over, and this is all part of the unfinished Chinese civil war. Mm. And going back to the one China policy, right? If I can use a chess game as an analogy, right? From 1949 to 1971, this chess game was called One China, and Taipei had the upper hand. But in 1971, Beijing joined the UN, Taipei was ousted, and China has the upper hand since then. Mm-hmm. But then Taiwan now wants to change the status quo, because they, of course, you can argue that Taiwan has every right to change the status quo. They do not want to be in diplomatic isolation forever.
Right.
But then, if you want to change the status quo, then there will be, you know, costs. Mm. And the U.S. has been trying to help Taiwan change that.
Mm. Let's go into that right now, Ben, because we've seen this time and again in world history. A nation's quest for self-determination, yet eventually playing into the agenda of another nation, not necessarily theirs. How sure are we that Taiwan right now is not playing into the agenda of the U.S.?
Well, Taiwan, even if it's playing into America's agenda, it's willingly doing so, because assumptions are a recipe for miscalculation and for disaster, right? So from Taiwan's point of view, they think the U.S. and Japan will rush to their rescue in the event of conflict. And so Pelosi's visit has emboldened Taiwan, right? Now, the other assumptions are, you know, China is convinced that the U.S. will not risk the lives of American soldiers and go to war over Taiwan. Mm. On the other hand, the U.S. suspects China is just bluffing and does not dare make a move that is too risky militarily, economically, and diplomatically, mm. right? But the can I just add one last sentence? The meeting between Nancy Pelosi and Tsai Ing-wen, President Tsai, may not have been the most important meeting when Nancy Pelosi visited. Excuse me.
It's all right.
Analysts are speculating that the meeting between the TSMC chairman, Mark Liu, was as important, if not more important. TSMC is the world's biggest maker of chips, right? And Nancy Pelosi wants TSMC, or is trying to talk TSMC into relocating its engineers and facilities to the U.S., right? And if you think about it, this is not my view, but this is, you know, a lot of speculation. Analysts are saying that if TSMC quits Taiwan, then this will be the beginning of Taiwan's end.
Mm-hmm.
Because if TSMC moves out of Taiwan, then it's tantamount to the U.S. recognizing that it cannot stop China from eventually taking over Taiwan. And so it's just preparing for the PRC to seize Taiwan.
Mm.
And this will be a disaster. This will be for the region, right?
But is it, Ben, is it a disaster that's waiting to happen? Is it a foregone conclusion that what we saw between Russia and Ukraine might just happen between Beijing and Taipei?
Right. Well, China has, pledged since 1979, China has pledged peaceful reunification with Taiwan. And to be fair, to call a spade, I think all parties, China, the U.S., and Taiwan, have been relatively restrained, during this fourth Taiwan Strait crisis, right? But China is not, trigger happy. They're not the provocateur, right? But then if you provoke China, time and again, then it's going to be, it could be dangerous. It's like, pricking the dragon with a needle, right? And sooner or later, the dragon will feel the pain, no matter how thick its skin is, right? If you do that time and again. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, the Philippines, we have to ask ourselves, of course, first things first would be the evacuation plans, right, for all the OFWs in Taiwan. But then the other thing is we have to ask ourselves whether we want to be caught in the line of fire, whether we want to become collateral damage of this unfinished Chinese civil war.
And it's not just the Philippines, Ben. It's the whole region watches what's happening.
Exactly.
Should it remain as that? Should all these other nations remain as such, just bystanders, just spectators to what is happening? What is expected of the region right now?
Right. Well, the region, all the ASEAN nations have urged all sides to be, to restrain themselves, to be calm. But I think we have a leader, we have a president who has had a 48-year friendship with China. And how many world leaders, have a five-decade friendship with China? So we are in a unique position right? To, you know, talk to China, to convince them to, you know, to back down, right? In the event, you know, at the brink of conflict, right? Like I said, China is will not do anything drastic unless provoked, right? They're not provocateur. And I think what will happen, if I can gaze into my crystal ball, I think there will be there won't be full-scale war, no, not even limited war, but there will be maybe a mishap, maybe miscalculation. There will be conflict, and then Taiwan, China will be able to force Taiwan to sit down for peace negotiations, right? But then it'll be the brink of war, and so hopefully. Because for China, they want to win the war without firing a single bullet. That's according to Sun Tzu Art of War. And so from China's point of view, you know, they wouldn't want to waste a bullet or a missiles, right? They think they are they have the ability to force Taiwan to its knees. You know, they before any conflict, they can buy Taiwanese stocks, they can buy Taiwan property, Taiwan dollar, and later on, when there's conflict, they can start dumping, and Taiwan's economy could crash, and they could force Taiwan to its knees. But we should not... Yeah, go ahead, sorry. Yeah,
let's go back to the opportunity for the Philippines here, because it may be seen as an opportunity for the Philippines to broker talks, to talk peace to both nations who do have ties, strong ties with Taipei and China. But how can it not be misconstrued as meddling into the affairs between these two entities?
I know. Of course, China does not, they say they broke no interference, right? And we won't be meddling because we are not, you know, sabotaging the relations between China and Taiwan. We're just calling for peace. Right, we're calling for restraint, and I don't think that would be that would go down, you know, badly with the Chinese, because the Chinese are for peace as well, right? The Chinese are not, you know, warmongers. You see, the all these tensions is good for arms manufacturers, right? It's not good for, you know, the countries in this region, even Japan and South Korea. Right. But then some hawks, right? Hawks in, and when I say hawks, I don't just mean hawks in the U.S. I mean hawks in China, hawks in Taiwan, you know, the conservatives all want tensions. They all want, you know, for them, it's good news, right? that it justifies their existence. They get a bigger budget to buy more toys. You know, toys, weapons.
Yeah. Right? But here's the thing, Ben, to the uninitiated. Yes. People might just find it really silly or even doubtful that the U.S. would go through such lengths just to provoke war, just so they can benefit from it in the end. What do you say to those who are doubtful that this is really what's happening?
I don't think the U.S. administration is, you know, this is their agenda per se, right? This their objective, but we cannot rule out that the hawks, right, think this, and the thought of the hawks, if they have the upper hand, you know, if the hawks in China and the hawks in the U.S. have the upper hand, then there could be a clash, right? There could be conflict because it's nationalism, right?
But if this is not the main agenda, then what is?
Well. They, of course, they want to help Taiwan break out of diplomatic isolation. They want to, you know, I don't know if you can use the word change the status quo so that Taiwan can become a normal country, de jure independent, you know, or even, you know, back rejoining the UN, right? That may be the immediate, you know, the clear goal or objective.
And what's in it for them?
I think for the U.S., it is a fact that China is now the number two economy in the world. China is number two. The U.S. is number one. And I think the U.S., you know, won't just sit back and watch China overtake them as number one. The China, you know, the U.S. has to do something. Of course, it's they're claiming that they're defending freedom and democracy. right? But from China's point of view, it's not about freedom and democracy. It's, you know, they see a lot of double standards, and they, you know, take Russia, for example. The question is, was Russia provoked to invade Ukraine, right? Of course, different people have different takes on this. And so when it comes to China, U.S., Taiwan, or even China-U.S. relations, it's the same thing. You know, you won't be able to convince, you know, hawks otherwise, right? I think at least for now, the moderates have the upper hand. You know, President Biden, President Xi Jinping, they have been relatively restrained, and they're not, you know, looking for a fight, you know. But then there are people in the U.S. Military, in the U.S. you know, administration, in the Congress and Senate, who, you know, would be happy to see conflict, I think.
Let's bring the discussion here to the Philippines now. Secretary of State, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, just visiting the Philippines. Before that, you had the U.S. Secretary of State of the Trump administration, Mike Pompeo, also visiting the Philippines. Both secretaries really reaffirming their ties to the Philippines. How does this now affect the relations between the Philippines and China?
Right. For us, I think it's a balancing act. Right. And I think our president, you know, is will do very well. He knows how to, you know, what balancing is all about. He won't choose sides. He won't, you know, side with the U.S. or side with China. But it's difficult. It's walking a diplomatic tightrope. And it'll be a test of his wisdom, his courage, right? And his, basically, you know, brains and brawns. You know, it's not going to be easy. It's not, it's going to be tough, right? The U.S. may pressure us to do this or that, but then at the end of the day, we are a sovereign nation, and we have to decide for ourselves, you know, what is in our best interests, right? There's no use finger pointing and you know, blaming or trying to determine who started all this, who's trying to change the status quo, because it's a question of which came first, the chicken or the egg, right? Was it the U.S. which provoked China first, or was it the fact that because China's, you know, Goliath, it's so big and so it poses a threat to its neighbors, even though it doesn't say or do anything, right?
Well, finally, you were talking about the president, Marcos, here. You're here in the Philippines right now, Ben, to observe the first 100 days of President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. How's your narrative looking like? How's it shaping up? How are you going to report on it?
Because I work for a Singapore newspaper, and so I will be writing about the diplomatic, you know, his foreign policy as opposed to domestic policy, right? Because I'm not, I don't consider myself an expert on domestic politics here, even though I'm Filipino. Yeah. But I think diplomacy, I think he's still very, enigma. He's enigmatic. He hasn't shown his cards yet. He's playing it safe, right? But I think his speech at the UN will be telling, right? And I think the speech at the UN in September could change the world's perception of the Philippines and of the Marcos family, right? Because it was the 1974 trip by Imelda, right, and Bongbong Marcos, right? September 1974, 10 days, right, in five cities. And they met Mao, Imelda made Mano, but instead of her using her forehead, she used her cheek to Mao, and then Mao took her hand and kissed it. And this is an iconic picture, right? So if you remember the Chinese vice president, Wang Xishan, when he came to attend, PBBM's inauguration, right? He visited, he paid a courtesy call on Imelda, right? Now, he met, of course, PBBM, Sarah, Duterte, but he did not meet Robredo or any of the former presidents or first ladies. Mm. So the Chinese have this special relationship with not just Imelda, but the Marcos family. Okay? And so I hate to repeat myself, but I think PBBM is in a unique position, right, to play the role of peacemaker, right, in this region.
Right? All right, and we're gonna have to leave it at that. And as you said, wait for September for that speech before the UN to really see what those cards are. Yes. As Philippine President Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. really lays out his plans or his diplomatic plans and diplomatic agenda when he delivers that speech before the UN. Benjamin Lim there, the global affairs correspondent of the Singapore Straits Times, joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it, Ben. Take care and you keep
safe. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right, from there, we're going to take a break now. Still ahead, several transport groups seek a TRO against a no-contact apprehension policy in Metro Manila. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back in more news, government set to submit its proposed 5.26 trillion peso national budget for 2023 to Congress come Monday. Our very own Warren de Guzman now joins us with that story. Warren, what more can you tell us?
Well, good afternoon, Carmina. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. will submit the proposed 5.268 trillion national budget for 2023, his first full year in office, to the Philippine Congress on Monday, August 22nd. Budget Secretary Amina Pangandaman says the budget is geared toward economic transformation for inclusivity and sustainability. She adds it is aimed at creating more quality and green jobs, reducing poverty incidents, promoting digitalization, and achieving an inclusive and resilient economy. Finance Secretary Benjamin Jokno, meanwhile, says revenues are picking up thanks to the reopening of the economy, and this will help them fund the spending plan. He said, "Our revenues are on the rise, reflecting improvements in the labor market driven by a robust economic activity. For the first half of 2022, total revenue collection reached 1.7 trillion pesos, 16% higher than the same period in 2021. This year, we expect revenue collection to already exceed its pre-pandemic level." Finance Undersecretary Zeno Abenoja says any budget shortfall will be funded through borrowings, but these will be from domestic sources to limit any foreign exchange risk. And speaking of foreign exchange risk, Philippine Central Bank Governor Felipe Medalla again discussed monetary policy plans amid expectations for further tightening by the U.S. Federal Reserve. The Philippine Central Bank has hiked interest rates this year as part of its plan to anchor inflation expectations, and the rates have also been in response to a widening differential between U.S. interest rates, as the U.S. Fed has also been hiking aggressively to address U.S. inflation. The differential has led to some capital outflows from Philippine markets and the weakening of the Philippine peso against the U.S. dollar. Medalla says the U.S. is far from hitting its inflation goal. The Fed won't be as aggressive as before, but you cannot rule out 50 basis point adjustments. The Philippine Central Bank will have another monetary policy rate setting meeting tomorrow, Thursday, August 18th. And Medalla says it will not be zero and it won't be 75 like the previous unannounced or rather surprise 75 basis point hike that they pulled off. He says it is probably more than a coin toss, but he will not say which side of the coin is heavier. He also discussed what would happen with monetary policy moving forward. He said as to whether there will be more rate hikes in the remaining meetings, we will not rule them out. As you know, we want the midpoint of the forecast for next year to be below 4 and the midpoint of the forecast for 2024 to be closer to or as close as possible to 3%. Exactly how many rate hikes that will require, it is hard to forecast because a lot of things that drive inflation may subside. Now, Bank of the Philippine Islands lead economist June Neri says they see the dollar-peso exchange rate hitting 55.40 by the end of this year as the Philippine Central Bank steps up its own rate increases over the next two quarters. Neri adds more dollar inflows will also help support the exchange rate by the fourth quarter. Security Bank Treasurer Andre Ibarra says the exchange rate they see the exchange rate hitting 56 to 56.25 against the U.S. dollar by the end of 2022. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot. Warren De Guzman there joining us on the line. And back here in the newsroom, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. receives his second COVID booster shot during a vaccination campaign event in Manila. Our very own Pia Gutierrez now joins us with an update. Pia, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Yes, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. received his second COVID-19 booster shot during the Pinaslakas vaccine campaign here in SM Manila. No less than the Department of Health, OIC, Undersecretary Maria Rosario Bergere administered the Pfizer jab to the President 4 months after his first booster shot. Also with the chief executive was his son, Ilocos Norte Representative Sandro Marcos, who also received his booster vaccine. No less than Manila Mayor Honey Lacuna, who is a doctor, administered the jab to the younger Marcos. In his speech, Carmina, the president said that all of this is to help government to encourage the public to get boosted against the virus and to inform the public of the importance and the necessity of getting their third and fourth COVID jab, especially with the threat of more transmissible Omicron subvariants. As we know, the Department of Health is endeavoring to ramp up COVID-19 vaccinations to get at least 50% of the general population boosted against the virus and have 90% of the senior population get their primary doses against COVID-19. This is all within the first 100 days of the Marcos administration. In his speech, the president also said that his administration is looking to get a new generation vaccines that specifically targets the Omicron variant and its subvariants. He said also that the only way for government to lift COVID restrictions and to help the economy have to recover from the pandemic is to get everyone immunized against COVID-19, to build up that wall of protection against the virus. Meanwhile, Carmina, in an interview after the event, the president said that he is inclined to extend the state of public health emergency until the end of the year when it expires later in September. Marcos Jr. also said that he is looking to reorganize the Sugar Regulatory Administration following the release of the illegal sugar importation order that would have allowed the importation of 300,000 metric tons of sugar without his approval. He is also set to meet with stakeholders, particularly the industrial consumers of sugar, such as the soda manufacturers, as well as sugar planters and millers, to come up with a sort of an arrangement to address supply issues, saying that he is particularly concerned about the potential loss of jobs because of this situation. He says the government will be using what remains of the local supply and will augment the volume needed through importation. He says through this arrangement, the government is hoping to be able to bring down sugar prices from around 100 pesos per kilo to around 70 to 80 pesos per kilo. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Pia Gutierrez there joining us live. Back here in the newsroom, public transport groups challenged the no-contact apprehension policy before the Supreme Court. The groups led by Pasang Masda are asking the High Court for a temporary restraining order on the policy's implementation. Pasang Masda President Obed Martin says not only are they not given the chance to appeal traffic citations, the penalties are also too expensive.
Kung lahat ng driver na yan, lahat ng nahuhuli na yan, isipin niyo operator na magdudusa, magbabayad. Eh baka sabi ko nga, baka dumating na ang panahon, hindi na kayong mag-servisyo. Sapagkat lahat ng kikitain namin, mapunta na lamang sa kanila. Hindi ho nakukuha sa palakihan ng penalty ang pagdidisiplina sa driver. Pwede ho natin bababa ang penalty pag nagkaroon ng pangalawang pagkakamali ang chauffeur, ipatawag ng LGU, bigyan ng edukasyon, i-seminar po yan.
Named as respondents to the TRO petition were several local governments in Metro Manila and the Land Transportation Office. The High Court was given or has given them 10 days to comment, but the mayors of Quezon City and Valenzuela City say they will continue to implement the measure. They claim it has helped improve the traffic discipline in their cities. U.S. President Joe Biden signs into law a major climate and health care spending bill. The $430 billion measure, dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act, was touted by the White House as the biggest commitment to mitigating climate change in U.S. history. It will also allow Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices for the elderly. Under the plan, the U.S. government will spend about $370 billion on green energy initiatives. To pay for this, the law will close tax loopholes and enforce a 15% minimum tax on corporations, a measure Biden has long proposed as a way to get the wealthy to pay part of their fair share.
Let me say from the start, with this law, the American people won and the special interests lost. Today offers further proof that the soul of America is vibrant, the future of America is bright, and the promise of America is real and just beginning.
Indigenous star Sasheen Little Feather receives an apology from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. This comes nearly 50 years after she was booed off the Oscar stage for declining Marlon Brando's award on his behalf in protest of the film industry's treatment of Native Americans. The Academy's Film Museum has pledged to confront the Oscars' problematic history, including racism. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. That'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.